that's when I started getting a very unique reputation for the guy who smiled when everything got so fucked up in Hell Week. And at its worst is when I found strength. And I was able to dig down when I saw everybody's face kind of hanging down low and I saw it was extremely horrible. I would come up with something epic like that song or something else.
I've always found inspiration in film. Rocky helped motivate me to achieve my dream of being invited to SEAL training, but Platoon would help me and my crew find an edge during the dark nights of Hell Week when the instructors were mocking our pain, telling us how sorry we were, and sending us into the head-high surf over and over again. Adagio and Strings was the score to one of my favorite scenes in Platoon, and with bone-chilling fog wrapping all around us, I stretched my arms out like Elias when he was getting gunned down by the Viet Cong and sang my ass off. We'd all watched that movie together during first phase, and my antics had a dual effect of pissing off the instructors and firing up my crew. Finding moments of laughter in the pain and delirium turned the entire melodramatic experience upside down for us. It gave us some control of our emotions. Again, this was all a mind game, and I damn sure wasn't going to lose. But the most important games within the game were the races that the instructors set up between boat crews. Damn near everything in Buds was a competition. We'd run boats and logs up and down the beach. We had paddle races, and we even did the damn O course carrying a log or a boat between obstacles. We'd carry them while balancing on narrow beams over spinning logs and across rope bridges. We'd send it high over the wall, and we dropped it at the foot of the 30-foot high cargo net while we climbed up and over that damn thing. The winning team was almost always rewarded with rest, and the losing teams got extra beatdowns from Psycho Pete. They were ordered to perform sets of push-ups and sit-ups in the wet sand, then do berm sprints, their bodies quivering with exhaustion, which felt like failure on top of failure. Psycho let them know it, too. He laughed in their face as he hunted quitters. "You are absolutely pathetic," he said. "I hope to God you fucking quit, because if they allow you in the field, you're going to get us all killed." Watching him berate my classmates gave me a dual sensation. I didn't mind him doing his job, but he was a bully, and I never liked bullies. He'd been coming at me hard since I got back to Buds, and early on I decided I would show him that he couldn't get to me. Between bouts of surf torture, when most guys stand nut to butt to transfer heat, body to body, I stood apart. Everyone else was shivering. I didn't even twitch, and I saw how much that bothered him. The one luxury we had during Hell Week was chow. We ate like kings. We're talking omelets, roast chicken and potatoes, steak, hot soup, pasta with meat sauce, all kinds of fruit, brownies, soda, coffee, and a lot more. The catch is we had to run the mile there and back with that 200-pound boat on our heads. I always left chow hall with a peanut butter sandwich tucked in my wet and sandy pocket to scarf on the beach when the instructors weren't looking. One day after lunch, Psycho decided to give us a bit more than a mile. It became obvious at the quarter-mile marker, when he picked up his pace, that he wasn't taking us directly back to the grinder. "You boys better keep the fuck up," he yelled. As one boat crew fell back, I checked my guys. "We are staying on this motherfucker. Fuck him." "Roger that," said Freak Brown. True to his word, he'd been with me on the front of that boat, the two heaviest points, since Sunday night, and he was only getting stronger. Psycho stretched us out on the soft sand for more than 4 miles. He tried like hell to lose us, too, but we were his shadow. He switched up the cadence. One minute he was sprinting, then he was crouching down, wide-legged, grabbing his nuts and doing elephant walks. Then he loped at a jogger's pace before breaking into another wind sprint down the beach. By then, the closest boat was a quarter mile behind, but we were clipping his damn heels. We mimicked his every step and refused to let our bully gain any satisfaction at our expense. He may have smoked everybody else, but he did not smoke Boat Crew 2. Hell Week is the devil's opera, and it builds like a crescendo, peaking in torment on Wednesday and staying right there until they call it on Friday afternoon. By Wednesday, we were all broke dick, chafed to holy hell. Our whole body was one big raspberry, oozing pus and blood. Mentally, we were zombies. The instructors had us doing simple boat raises, and we were all dragging. Even my crew could barely lift that boat. Meanwhile, Psycho and SBG and the other instructors kept close watch, looking for weaknesses as always. I had a real hate for the instructors. They were my enemy, and I was tired of them trying to burrow into my brain. I glanced at Brown, and for the first time all week, he looked shaky. The whole crew did. Shit, I felt miserable too. My knee was the size of a grapefruit, and every step I took torched my nerves, which is why I was searching for something to fuel me. I locked in on Psycho Pete. I was sick of that motherfucker. The instructors looked composed and comfortable. We were desperate, and they had what we needed, energy. It was time to flip the game and own real estate in their heads. When they clocked out that night and drove home after a pussy-ass 8-hour shift while we were still going hard, I wanted them thinking about boat crew too. I wanted to haunt them when they slipped into bed with their wives. I wanted to occupy so much space in their minds that they couldn't even get it up. To me, that would be as powerful as putting a knife in their dick. So I deployed a process that I now call taking souls. I turned to Brown. "You know why I call you freak?" I asked. He looked over as we lowered the boat, then lifted it up overhead like creaky robots on reserve battery power. "Because you are one of the baddest men I've ever seen in my damn life." He cracked a smile. "And you know what I say to these motherfuckers right here?" I tipped my elbow at the 9 instructors gathered on the beach, drinking coffee and talking bullshit. I say they can go fuck themselves. Bill nodded and narrowed his eyes on our tormentors, while I turned to the rest of the crew. "Now let's throw this shit up high and show them who we are." "Fucking beautiful," Bill said. "Let's do it." Within seconds, my whole team had life. We didn't just lift the boat overhead and set it down hard. We threw it up, caught it overhead, tapped the sand with it, and threw it up high again. The results were immediate and undeniable. Our pain and exhaustion faded. Each rep made us stronger and faster, and each time we threw the boat up, we all chanted, "You can't hurt boat crew too." That was our fuck you to the instructors, and we had their full attention as we soared on a second wind. On the toughest day of the hardest week in the world's toughest training, Boat Crew 2 was moving at lightning speed and making a mockery of Hell Week. The look on the instructors' faces told a story. Their mouths hung open like they were witnessing something nobody had ever seen before. Some averted their eyes, almost embarrassed. Only SBG looked satisfied. Since that night in Hell Week, I've deployed the Taking Souls concept countless times. Taking Souls is a ticket to finding your own reserve power and riding a second wind. It's the tool you can call upon to win any competition or overcome every life obstacle. You can utilize it to win a chess match or conquer an adversary in a game of office politics. It can help you rock a job interview or excel at school. And yes, it can be used to conquer all manner of physical challenges. But remember, this is a game you are playing within yourself. Unless you're engaged in physical competition, I'm not suggesting that you try to dominate someone or crush their spirit. In fact, they never even need to know you're playing this game. This is a tactic for you to be your best when duty calls. It's a mind game you're playing on yourself. Taking someone's soul means you've gained a tactical advantage. Life is all about looking for tactical advantages, which is why we stole the Hell Week schedule, why we nipped Psycho's heels on that run, and why I made a show of myself in the surf, humming the platoon theme song. Each of those incidents was an act of defiance that empowered us. But defiance isn't always the best way to take someone's soul. It all depends upon your terrain. During BUDS, the instructors didn't mind if you looked for advantages like that. They respected it, as long as you were also kicking ass. You must do your own homework. Know the terrain you're operating in, when and where you can push boundaries, and when you should fall in line. Next, take inventory of your mind and body on the eve of battle. List out your insecurities and weaknesses, as well as your opponents. For instance, if you're getting bullied, and you know where you fall short or feel insecure, you can stay ahead of any insults or barbs a bully may throw your way. You can laugh at yourself along with them, which disempowers them. If you take what they do or say less personally, they no longer hold any cards. Feelings are just feelings. On the other hand, people who are secure with themselves don't bully other people. They look out for other people. So if you're getting bullied, you know that you're dealing with someone who has problem areas you can exploit or soothe. Sometimes the best way to defeat a bully is to actually help them. If you can think 2 or 3 moves ahead, you will commandeer their thought process. And if you do that, you've taken their damn soul without them even realizing it. Our SEAL instructors were our bullies, and they didn't realize the games I was playing during that week to keep boat crew too sharp, and they didn't have to. I imagine that they were obsessed with our exploits during Hell Week, but I don't know that for sure. It was a ploy I used to maintain my mental edge and help our crew prevail. In the same way, if you are up against a competitor for a promotion and you know where you fall short, you can shape up your game ahead of your interview or evaluation. In that scenario, laughing at your weaknesses won't solve the problem. You must master them. In the meantime, if you are aware of your competitor's vulnerabilities, you can spin those to your advantage. But all of that takes research. Again, know the terrain, know yourself, and you'd better know your adversary in detail. Once you're in the heat of battle, it comes down to staying power. If it's a difficult physical challenge, you will probably have to defeat your own demons before you can take your opponent's soul. That means rehearsing answers to the simple question that is sure to rise up like a thought bubble. Why am I here? If you know that moment is coming and have your answer ready, you will be equipped to make the split-second decision to ignore your weakened mind and keep moving. Know why you're in the fight to stay in the fight. And never forget that all emotional and physical anguish is finite. It all ends eventually. Smile at pain and watch it fade for at least a second or two. If you can do that, you can string those seconds together and last longer than your opponent thinks you can, and that may be enough to catch a second wind. There is no scientific consensus on second wind. Some scientists think it's the result of endorphins flooding your nervous system. Others think it's a burst of oxygen that can help break down lactic acid, as well as glycogen and triglycerides muscles need to perform. Some say it's purely psychological. All I know is that by going hard when we felt defeated, we were able to ride a second wind through the worst night in Hell Week. And once you have that second wind behind you, it's easy to break your opponent down and snatch a soul. The hard part is getting to that point, because the ticket to victory often comes down to bringing your very best when you feel your worst. That's some knowledge right there. So, you know, you want to walk us through that concept that you developed and how that all happened?
Yes. So this was years and years in the making, and taking souls is probably one of the most medieval things I do, you know, so my whole mind works very different than most people's. And so I came up with this by kind of realizing how weak my mind was. I hated people being better than me. This is why I got, you know, so insecure. I hated so many different things. So I started studying my own mind, and I realized that a lot of people need to realize that there are so many insecure people out there. And I knew from studying my mind that even these Navy SEALs, these instructors that had already gone through Navy SEAL training, were supposed to be the elite of the elite, badasses, whatever. I knew that they all have demons. They don't want alpha males, especially alpha males. They hate seeing anyone be better than them. And so what I realized going through Hell Week is I knew that these alpha males, these Navy SEAL instructors, they were all on the beach judging us. They were sitting there in their parkas, nice and warm, drinking their coffees, and they were judging all the students, saying, okay, yeah, when I was in Tuesday of Hell Week, I was better than that fucking guy right there, and I was better than that guy on Wednesday and all this stuff. So you have to know the human mind and how it works. So I knew that all I have to do right now to crack these men is I have to just find a little more strength. And so when they're imagining themselves on Wednesday, you know, they're imagining themselves being beat down, being like, oh my God, man, I can't wait till Friday. So I knew that. I knew where their mind was at. Even though they were warm, they weren't wet, they were thinking about themselves at the time I was at. And I was like, you know what? How can I do this? I was like, well, all I have to do is own some real estate in their mind. I have to show them that at their worst time in their life, I am at my best time. And I knew that that would totally fuck them up. So I kind of got my guys together, and we went crazy, as you know, as you just read. And what it did was they literally stopped fucking with Bro Crew too. Because they realized then, hey, there's no way in hell we can get to these guys. Because I literally took their soul. And I guarantee you, when they went home that night, there was no sex that night. Because they were thinking about not getting some, but they were thinking about, man, how the fuck did that boat crew do what I could have never done?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something that probably no boat crew had ever done where you're actually, and it's really strategic. It's almost like an illusion. You guys were still suffering just like everybody else, but you found that much more to do something that they hadn't even conceived of themselves. And that's what was shocking, right?
And that's the whole thing about it, Adam. All you have to do to take someone's soul, let's say you're running and you're neck for neck with a guy or a girl, whatever it may be, you have to last one more second. Let's say you're doing a marathon and at the 18 mile point, this guy's waiting for you to break. Once you break that person and that person drips off you, you can literally slow down. That person's broke. You have taken that whole mindset now is just broken. It's just lasting one more second longer than the person beside you. And then you broke them.
Yeah. You're both feeling the same pain. It's
exactly.
Not like you don't feel the pain.
Right. The pain is there. It's that person that can last a little bit longer or find the tactical advantage when everybody around you is suffering to say, okay, man, if I can muster up just enough strength. But what happens is, like that second win you're talking about, it's a lot more powerful than the second win, because it was almost like day one for us. It was Wednesday, and by us looking at, it's called the look. I looked at everybody around us, and they had this look of disbelief. That how the fuck are they doing that? So you're riding all these different emotions from, they're like, how the fuck is Boat Crew 2 doing it? And it's literally just jacking you up even more and more and more, watching all the disbelief around you.
Yeah, so you're feeling the pain, then you start doing this thing, still feeling the pain, and then all of a sudden you're riding the energy wave.
Exactly. And it's truly an amazing thing. It works in all kind of situations, not just physical. It can be anything. When you're doing something that most people think is impossible, and that is what it's all about. You're just kind of cracking a code a little bit to where everybody can do, anybody can do it. But you're just going to the next level. You're kind of taking off all these perceived limitations. Like everybody, they tell you on Wednesday, you start getting tired. They've been saying this for 70 years. On Wednesday of Hell Week, everybody gets tired. So what happens is that gets in your head. So you believe what another man told you, not how you feel. So you get to Wednesday and your mind says, oh, everybody said I'm tired, so I must be tired. I didn't believe shit. I wasn't taking in all this knowledge from previous classes. I was like, you know what? They're not me. Don't take in what someone else felt. Feel what you feel. Make that be your reality. Don't let their reality be your reality. So that's all it is. Like we always say in the book, life is one big mind game, but usually you're playing against yourself.
Yeah, because, scientists have looked at, like, the way our minds operate, and we're basically always, the human mind is always trying to find the easier path. Basically, it's always trying to find the easier path. So that's why mindset is so important, because you're basically continually having to push your mind towards the harder path, which ultimately gets you a lot more.
And that's very true, because the mind has so much information in it. That the reason why it does that is not so much for weakness. It has so much information in it that it's trying to say, okay, this is too much information. Let's go this way. So that's all it's doing, man. You have to reprogram it to say, oh, no. We're not doing that today. So usually the mind has the advantage over you. You have to get, this is your mind. This is your mind. We forget that. We think that this mind is somebody else's.
Yes.
And it's just walking you through life aimlessly. No. It is your mind. You must get it and program it to do what you want it to do at that specific time.
Beautiful. You said that after that, they stopped fucking with Boat Crew 2, but they didn't stop fucking with you. We're about to get into a theme here, which is pretty medieval.
You know what? And this is what happens also, man. When you kind of rub people the wrong way with having this kind of mindset, they're going to look for any advantage they can or any kind of opportunity they can to break your spirit. Because why? You just broke their spirit. You broke their spirit by making them feel less of a person. That's what it was all about to me. Hell Week and Buds, it was a war. Those instructors were the enemy. I was not friends with them. I did not like them. I challenged them and I went to war with them. And a lot of them didn't like me, but that's what I was looking for.
After rocking boat presses, the whole class was gifted an hour of sleep in a big green army tent they'd set up on the beach and outfitted with military cots. Those motherfuckers had no mattresses, but may as well have been a cotton-topped cloud of luxury, because once we were horizontal, we all went limp. Oh, but Psycho wasn't done with me. He let me sleep for a solitary minute, then woke me up and led me back onto the beach for some one-on-one time. He saw an opportunity to get in my head at last, and I was disoriented as I staggered toward the water all alone. But the cold woke me the fuck up. I decided to savor my extra hour of private surf torture. When the water was chest high, I began humming Adagio in Strings once more. Louder this time. Loud enough for that motherfucker to hear me over the crash of the surf. That song gave me life. I'd come to SEAL training to see if I was hard enough to belong and found an inner beast within that I never knew existed. A beast that I would tap into from then on whenever life went wrong. By the time I emerged from that ocean, I considered myself unbreakable. If only. Hell Week takes its toll on everybody. And later that night, with 48 hours to go, I went to MedCheck to get a Toradol shot in my knee to bring the swelling down. By the time I was back on the beach, the boat crews were out at sea in the midst of a paddling drill. The surf was pounding, the wind swirling. Psycho looked over at SBG. What the fuck are we gonna do with him? For the first time, he was hesitant and tired of trying to beat me down. I was good to go, ready for any challenge, but Psycho was over it. He was ready to give my ass a spa vacation. That's when I knew I'd outlasted him, that I had his soul. SBG had other ideas. He handed me a life jacket and attached a chem light to the back of my hat. Follow me, he said, as he charged up the beach. I caught up and we ran north for a good mile. By then we could barely see the boats and their bobbing lights through the mist and over the waves. All right, Goggins, now go swim out and find your fucking boat. He'd landed a hollow point on my deepest insecurity, pierced my confidence, and I was stunned silent. I gave him a look that said, are you fucking kidding me? I was a decent swimmer by then, and surf torture didn't scare me because we weren't that far from shore. But an open water, hypothermic swim, 1,000 yards offshore in a storm, to a boat that had no fucking idea I was heading their way, that sounded like a death sentence, and I hadn't prepared for anything like it. But sometimes the unexpected descends like chaos. And without warning, even the bravest among us must be ready to take on risks and tasks that seem beyond our capabilities. For me, in that moment, it came down to how I wanted to be remembered. I could have refused the order, and I wouldn't have gotten in trouble because I had no swim buddy. In SEAL training, you always have to be with a swim buddy. And it was obvious that he was asking me to do something that was extremely unsafe. But I also knew that my objective coming into SEAL training was more than making it through to the other side with a trident. For me, it was the opportunity to go up against the best of the best and distance myself from the pack. So even though I couldn't see the boats out past the thrashing waves, there was no time to dwell on fear. There was no choice to make at all. What are you waiting on, Goggins? Get your fucking ass out there, and do not fuck this up. Roger that, I shouted, and sprinted into the surf. Trouble was, strapped to the buoyancy vest, nursing a wounded knee, wearing boots, I couldn't swim for shit, and it was almost impossible to duck dive through the waves. I had to flail over the whitewash, and with my mind managing so many variables, the ocean seemed colder than ever. I swallowed water by the gallon. It was as if the sea was prying open my jaws and flooding my system, and with each gulp, my fear magnified. I had no idea that back on land, SBG was preparing for a worst-case scenario rescue. I didn't know he'd never put another man in that position before. I didn't realize that he saw something special in me, and like any strong leader, wanted to see how far I could take it, as he watched my light bob on the surface, nervous as hell. He told me all of that during a recent conversation. At the time, I was just trying to survive. I finally made it through the surf and swam another half mile offshore, only to realize I had 6 boats bearing down on my head, teeter-tottering in and out of view, thanks to a 4-foot wind swell. They didn't know I was there. My light was faint, and in the trench I couldn't see a damn thing. I kept waiting for one of them to come barreling down from the peak of a swell and mow me the fuck down. All I can do is bark into the darkness like a hoarse sea lion. Boat crew two! Boat crew two! It was a minor miracle that my guys heard me. They wheeled our boat around, and Freak Brown grabbed me with his big-ass hooks and hauled me in like a prized catch. I lay back in the middle of the boat, my eyes closed, and jackhammered for the first time all week. I was so cold I couldn't hide it. Damn, Goggins, Brown said. You must be insane. You okay? I nodded once and got a hold of myself. I was the leader of that crew and couldn't allow myself to show weakness. I tensed every muscle in my body, and my shiver slowed to a stop in real time. That's how you lead from the motherfucking front, I said, coughing up salt water like a wounded bird. I couldn't keep a straight face for long, neither could my crew. They knew damn well that a crazy-ass swim wasn't my idea. Dude, I gotta stop right there. I mean, not everybody who reads this or hears this is gonna know how it is in the ocean.
Right.
But, like, the thing about the ocean, it does come down to variables, right? Like, people who aren't familiar with getting out in open water, at first, like, just the sheer water could make them feel uncomfortable because it's a place you're not supposed to be. You know, it's hostile to human life out there. It's beautiful, but it can be hostile to human life. And then you're adding on the night. You're adding on wind swell and a stormy kind of sea. You're adding on being fully dressed where you can't even move. You know, those variables, each one of those is like exponential difficulty.
Well, let's not forget also, Adam, that I haven't slept yet.
Right. That's a variable.
You know, I've been up since Sunday and it's now, you know, what, Wednesday night?
I mean.
And my whole boat crew has, you know, everybody has gotten at least 1 hour of sleep.
Yeah.
And I have been up the whole time, man, and I am fucked.
Well, I mean, you know who's going to, like, appreciate this the most is, like, the people who are in the ocean all the time. Like, surfers, even big wave surfers are going to read this, and they're going to be like, holy fucking shit.
Well, and people have no idea how hard it is to have that big-ass life jacket.
Yes.
On, you know, and you're literally just bobbing.
Yeah, because you can't move around.
No, you can't move, man. Yeah. So I would, like, swim and get pushed back in. And so what's not on here is how many times I got, you know, literally pushed back on to the daggone beach.
Yeah, because it takes a crazy amount of strength to actually, you're actually now become a boat yourself.
Right. So like I was going up and down the beach trying to find the right break to just try to get out past them. And it was a brutal, brutal.
Yeah, you had to ride the rip, right? You had to find a rip tide that could just pull you out.
Exactly. It was horrible.
As the clock ran down on Hell Week, we were in the demo pit, just off Coronado's famous Silver Strand. The pit was filled with cold mud and topped off with icy water. There was a rope bridge, two separate lines, one for the feet and one for the hands, stretching across it from end to end. One by one, each man had to navigate their way across while the instructors shook the shit out of it, trying to make us fall. To maintain that kind of balance takes tremendous core strength. And we were all cooked and at our wits' end. Plus, my knee was still fucked. In fact, it had gotten worse and required a pain shot every 12 hours. But when my name was called, I climbed onto that rope, and when the instructors went to work, I flexed my core and held on with all I had left. 9 months earlier, I had topped out at 297 pounds and couldn't even run a quarter mile. Back then, when I was dreaming of a different life, I remember thinking that just getting through Hell Week would be the biggest honor of my life so far. Even if I never graduated from BUDS, surviving Hell Week alone would have meant something. But I didn't just survive. I was about to finish Hell Week at the top of my class. And for the first time, I knew I was a bad motherfucker. Once I was so focused on failing, I was afraid to even try. Now I would take on any challenge. All my life I was terrified of water, and especially cold water. But standing there in the final hour, I wished the ocean, wind, and mud were even colder. I was completely transformed physically, which was a big part of my success in BUDS. But what saw me through Hell Week was my mind, and I was just starting to tap into its power. That's what I was thinking about as the instructors did their best to throw me off that rope bridge like a mechanical bull. I hung tough and got as far as anyone else in Class 231, before nature won out and I was sent spinning into the freezing mud. I wiped it from my eyes and mouth and laughed like mad as Freak Brown helped me up. Not long after that, SBG stepped to the edge of the pit. "Hell Week secure!" he shouted to the 30 guys still left, quivering in the shallows. All of us chafed and bleeding, bloated and stiff. "You guys did an amazing job." Some guys screamed with joy. Others collapsed to their knees with tears in their eyes and thanked God. I stared into the heavens too, pulled Freak Brown in for a hug, and high-fived my team. Every other boat crew had lost men, but not Boat Crew 2. We lost no men and won every single race. We continued to celebrate as we boarded a bus to the grinder. Once we arrived, there was a large pizza for each guy, along with a 64-ounce bottle of Gatorade and the coveted brown T-shirt. That pizza tasted like motherfucking manna from heaven, but the shirts meant something more significant. When you first arrive at Bud's, you wear white T-shirts every day. Once you survive Hell Week, you get to swap them out for brown shirts. It was a symbol that we'd advanced to a higher level, and after a lifetime of mostly failure, I definitely felt like I was someplace new. I tried to enjoy the moment like everyone else, but my knee hadn't felt right in 2 days, and I decided to leave and see the medics. On my way off the grinder, I looked to my right and saw nearly 100 helmets lined up. They belonged to the men who'd rung the bell, and they stretched past the statue, all the way to the quarterdeck. I read some of the names, guys who I liked. I knew how they felt, because I was there when my pararescue class graduated without me. That memory had dominated me for years, but after 130 hours of hell, it no longer defined me. Every man was required to see the medics that evening, but our bodies were so swollen, they had a hard time discerning injuries from general soreness. All I knew was my right knee was thrice fucked, and I needed crutches to get around. Freak Brown left MedCheck, bruised and battered. Kenny came out clean and barely limped, but he was plenty sore. Thankfully, our next evolution was Walk Week. We had 7 days to eat, drink, and heal up before shit got real once again. It wasn't much, but enough time for most of the insane motherfuckers that managed to remain in Class 231 to get well. Me, on the other hand? My swollen knee hadn't gotten any better by the time they snatched my crutches away. But there was no time for boo-hooing. First phase fun wasn't over yet. After Walk Week came knot tying, which may not sound like much, but was way worse than I expected, because that particular drill took place at the bottom of the pool, where those same instructors would do their best to drown my one-legged ass. It was as if the devil had been watching the whole show, waited out intermission, and now his favorite part was coming right up. The night before Bud's kicked back up in intensity, I could hear his words ringing in my stressed-out brain as I tossed and turned all night long. "They say you like suffering, Goggins, that you think you're a bad motherfucker. Enjoy your extended stay in hell." So, man, Goggins, I mean, that is crazy. So you get through Hell Week.
Right.
That's a milestone for anybody, and especially for you, where you'd come from and how hard you've been fighting. And you already know your body's fucked.
Yeah, man, I knew for a fact that there's going to be, you know, a little bit more training ahead of me. And I'm not talking about with my class. I had a feeling that something bad was going to happen to me. But, you know, my knee was so messed up that I went in and actually stole a whole bunch of Motrin. So you're supposed to go to the doc. So during med check, I think you have about maybe 2 or 3 med checks a day. I'm not quite for sure. I know you have one during the day, you know, during the morning, I think one in the afternoon maybe, and then one at night, or maybe it's one in the day, one at night, not for sure. But I actually went in and stored a whole bunch of Motrin. And by this time, it was my second Hell Week, so I knew kind of where I was going to be at, you know, different evolutions and whatnot. So I would, you know, stage Motrin in the sand.
Hmm.
So I was probably taking about 10 of these a day, and these are 800 milligrams. And the most you're supposed to take is 3. You know, 1 for breakfast, 1 for lunch, and 1 for dinner. And I was popping them, man, like Tic Tacs.
Hmm.
And I was just trying to get through this thing because I knew that, you know, I was just trying to get through the whole program.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally fighting each second is its own battle, right? Like each minute is its own battle. You're just staying one after another, stringing them together.
100%. And I didn't want to, so I was like my boat crew leader.
Hmm.
So the whole thing about being a leader is, you just cannot show weakness. And the second you start limping around or things start getting tough, your mind is going to, once again, take control. And if I would have limped around and that pain would have got even more than what it was, you know, my whole boat crew would have fed off of me, you know, kind of dragging my leg behind me. And, you know, it's infectious.
Yeah, you don't know who else would have might have crumbled.
Exactly. Weakness is infectious. So my bro crew saw that my knee was the size of a grapefruit. Mm. And I was like, fuck it, let's go. So that was also infectious. Mm. So having that kind of mindset, I knew I had to bring that, not just for myself. And that's a whole nother thing about being a leader, is I realized the more you think about yourself when you're going through hell, the harder hell's going to be. The second you start looking after everybody else and start, you know, being concerned about them, you no longer think about yourself. And when you don't think about yourself, you're not trapped in your own thoughts. You're not trapped in your own hell. And so that's what I did. And the more I thought about my boat crew and getting them through every evolution, that's being the best. You know, I didn't worry about my fucking knee. But the second hell week was over, that pain was real.
Yeah. You had a purpose bigger than yourself as the leader, which actually helped you achieve more. But then when it comes to the body, if you're injured, you're injured.
Exactly. And yeah, this is like what happened.
Well, we'll get into that later, but first we have a challenge here that kind of, what I like about this challenge you've got here is you're kind of walking through again the practice of taking souls and showing how it can apply to different areas in life.
Right, right.
So I'll read through it and we can talk a little bit more about it.
Roger that.
Challenge 4. Choose any competitive situation that you're in right now. Who is your opponent? Is it your teacher or coach? Your boss? An unruly client? No matter how they're treating you, there is one way to not only earn their respect, but turn the tables. Excellence. That may mean acing an exam, or crafting an ideal proposal, or smashing a sales goal. Whatever it is, I want you to work harder on that project or in that class than you ever have before. Do everything exactly as they ask, and whatever standard they set as an ideal outcome, you should be aiming to surpass that. If your coach doesn't give you time in the games, dominate practice. Check the best guy on your squad and show the fuck out. That means putting time in off the field, watching film so you can study your opponent's tendencies, memorizing plays, and training in the gym. You need to make that coach pay attention. If it's your teacher, then start doing work of high quality. Spend extra time on your assignments. Write papers for her that she didn't even assign. Come early to class. Ask questions. Pay attention. Show her who you are and want to be. If it's a boss, work around the clock. Get to work before them. Leave after they go home. Make sure they see that shit. When it's time to deliver, surpass their maximum expectations. Whoever you're dealing with, your goal is to make them watch you achieve what they could never have done themselves. You want them thinking how amazing you are. Take their negativity and use it to dominate their task with everything you've got. Take their motherfucking soul. Afterward, post it on social and add the hashtag, #can't hurt me, #taking souls. You know, I love that because your goal here is to take it out of the physical. I mean, yes, if it's a team sport or something where a coach has control, it's really a power dynamic game you're playing.
It is. And this takes me back to when, you know, we talked about me in high school and how much I loved basketball and how between, you know, my junior year, I got cut from the basketball team because, you know, I was just pissed off and I didn't want to go to daggone summer practice and stuff like that. And I still tried out. And when the first cuts came, I got cut first cuts, man. And that took my soul. But as my mind started changing and I started realizing what I was doing to myself, I started realizing, you know what, I have to dominate next year. So what I did was I came back the very next year and instead of shooting the ball all the time, because I knew the coach didn't like me. For whatever reason, the coach didn't like me at all. So I literally became one of the best defensive players in the state of Indiana. And I say that loud and proud because I went from a guy who shot the ball and was trying to become like, you know, everybody loves the guy that scores the points. I became the grittiest motherfucker on the daggone basketball court. So taking souls is also another way of, don't let anybody get the advantage over you. You have to change your mindset, find where you can get the advantage, and then dominate that area.
You turn yourself into the kind of player every coach had to put on the floor.
Exactly.
Because you changed the game in a way without having to need the ball.
Exactly. I took the decision-making out of his hands. There's not one coach on the planet Earth that doesn't want a defensive stopper.
Yeah.
So that's what I knew, and that's what I became.
Yeah, and it's great. It's great for any young people reading this or people who have kids who are not getting the time that they'd hoped to. Gives them ways, you know, dominating practice is a great thing. Check their best player. And if you can hold their best player, the best player on your team to nothing in a practice game, you're going to play.
And that's exactly what happened, man. I was in practice, man, busting my ass, and I just changed my whole mindset. I flipped it.
But, you know, the idea of power dynamics is so important because, you know, in Hell Week, You're not in the power position. The instructors are. In life, we always have people. I mean, it's very rare that you're not in a situation where there's some power dynamic that you have to deal with, whether it's a client or a boss or a teacher. They're always there. And so, you know, it's how do you manage that relationship? And what you're saying is manage it by being great. And your greatness will melt all the problems that you have.
That is true, but one thing you have to be careful for, taking souls is a very powerful, powerful thing, and it can piss a lot of people off. So what you have to understand is you have to do it with humility. And that was some of the things I got caught up in where I was, there's a time and a place to where, you know, you can't be so humble. And when I was going through SEAL training, it was mano y mano. So that was a place where I wanted them to feel pain. Because they were putting me through pain. But there's a lot of situations when you're using this, you know, when you're using this tactic, it is, you have to be careful because you can piss your boss off, you can piss people off. So do it with the understanding of you're trying to be your best. You are trying to be your very, very best in a time when everybody else is kind of tired. And that pisses people off. For you being a so-called overachiever, it makes people look at you very differently.
Yeah, so know that going in, but still do it.
Oh, yes, 100% still do it, but know that going in for sure.
Chapter 5, Armored Mind. Your knee looks pretty bad, Goggins. No fucking shit, Doc. With 2 days to go and walk week, I'd come by medical for a follow-up. The doctor rolled up my camo pants, and when he gave my right kneecap a gentle squeeze, pain seized my brain, but I couldn't show it. I was playing a role. I was the beat-up but otherwise healthy bud student ready for the fight, and I couldn't so much as grimace to pull it off. I already knew the knee was fucked, and that the odds of getting through another 5 months of training on one leg were low, but accepting another rollback meant enduring another hell week, and that was way too much to process. The swelling hasn't gone down much. How's it feel? The doctor was playing a role, too. SEAL candidates had a don't-ask-don't-tell agreement with most of the medical staff at Naval Special Warfare Command. I wasn't about to make the doctor's job easier by revealing anything to him, and he wasn't going to take caution side and pull the ripcord on a man's dream. He lifted his hand, and my pain faded. I coughed, and pneumonia once again rattled in my lungs until I felt the cold truth of his stethoscope on my skin. Ever since Hell Week was called, I've been coughing up brown knots of mucus. For the first 2 days, I lay in bed, day and night, spitting them into a Gatorade bottle, where I stored them like so many nickels. I could barely breathe, and couldn't move much either. I may have been a bad motherfucker in Hell Week, but that shit was over, and I had to deal with the fact that the devil and those instructors branded me too. "It's all right, Doc," I said. "A little stiff is all." Time is what I needed. I knew how to push through pain, and my body had almost always responded with performance. I wasn't going to quit just because my knee was barking. It would come around eventually. The doc prescribed medicine to reduce the congestion in my lungs and sinuses, and gave me some Motrin for my knee. Within 2 days, my breathing improved, but I still couldn't bend my right leg. This would be a problem. Of all the moments and buds that I thought could break me, a knot-tying exercise never registered on my radar. Then again, this wasn't the fucking Boy Scouts. This was an underwater knot-tying drill held in the 15-foot section of the pool. And while the pool didn't strike mortal fear into me like it once did, being negatively buoyant, I knew that any pool evolution could be my undoing, especially those that demanded treading water. Even before Hell Week, we'd been tested in the pool. We had to perform mock rescues on the instructors and do a 50-meter underwater swim without fins on a single breath. That swim started with a giant stride into the water, followed by a full somersault to siphon off any momentum whatsoever. Then without kicking off the side, we swam along the lane lines to the end of our 25-meter pool. On the far side, we were allowed to kick off the wall, then swim back. When I arrived at the 50-meter mark, I rose up and gasped for air. My heart hammered until my breath smoothed, and I grasped that I'd actually passed the first of a series of complicated underwater evolutions that were supposed to teach us to be calm, cool, and collected underwater on a breath hold. The knot-tying evolution was next in the series, and it wasn't about our ability to tie various knots or a way to time our max breath hold. Sure, both skills come in handy on amphibian operations, but this drill was more about our capacity to juggle multiple stressors in an environment that's not sustainable for human life. Despite my health, I was heading into the drill with some confidence. Things changed when I started treading water. That's how the drill began, with 8 students strung out across the pool, moving our hands and legs like egg beaters. That's hard enough for me on 2 good legs, but because my right knee didn't work, I was forced to tread water with just my left. That spiked the degree of difficulty and my heart rate, which sapped my energy. Each student had an instructor assigned to them for this evolution, and Psycho Pete specifically requested me. It was obvious I was struggling, and Psycho and his bruised pride were hungry for a little payback. With each revolution of my right leg, shock waves of pain exploded like fireworks. Even with Psycho eyeballing me, I couldn't hide it. When I grimaced, he smiled like a kid on Christmas morning. "Tie a square knot, then a bowline," he shouted. I was working so hard it was difficult to catch my breath, but Psycho didn't give 2 fucks. "Now, damn it!" I gulped air, bent from the waist, and kicked down. There were 5 knots in the drill altogether, and each student was told to grab their 8-inch slice of rope and tie them off one at a time at the bottom of the pool. We were allotted a breath in between, but could do as many as all 5 knots on a single breath. The instructor called out the knots, but the pacing was up to each student. We weren't allowed to use a mask or goggles to complete the evolution, and the instructor had to approve each knot with a thumbs up before we were permitted to surface. If they flashed a thumb down instead, we had to retie that knot correctly, and if we surfaced before a given knot was approved, that meant failure and a ticket home. Once back at the surface, there was no resting or relaxing between tasks. Treading water was the constant refrain, which meant soaring heart rates and the continual burning up of oxygen in the bloodstream for the one-legged man. Translation: the dives were uncomfortable as hell, and blacking out was a real possibility. Psycho glared at me through his mask as I worked my knots. After about 30 seconds, he'd approved both, and we surfaced. He breathed free and easy, but I was gasping and panting like a wet, tired dog. The pain in my knee was so bad, I felt sweat bead up on my forehead. When you're sweating in an unheated pool, you know shit's fucked up. I was breathless, low on energy, and wanted to quit. But quitting this evolution meant quitting buds altogether, and that wasn't happening.
"Oh no, are you hurt, Goggins? Do you have some sand in your pussy?"
Psycho asked. "I'll bet you can't do the last 3 knots on one breath." He said it with a smirk, like he was daring me. I knew the rules. I didn't have to accept his challenge, but that would have made Psycho just a little too happy, and I couldn't allow that. I nodded and kept treading water, delaying my dive until my pulse evened out, and I could score 1 deep, nourishing breath. Psycho wasn't having it. Whenever I opened my mouth, he splashed water in my face to stress me out even more, a tactic used when trainees started to panic. That made breathing impossible. "Go under now or you fail." I'd run out of time. I tried to gulp some air before my duck dive and tasted a mouthful of Psycho's splash water instead as I dove to the bottom of the pool on a negative breath hold. My lungs were damn near empty, which meant I was in pain from the jump, but I knocked the first one out in a few seconds. Psycho took his sweet time examining my work. My heart was thrumming, like high-alert Morse code. I felt it flip-flop in my chest, like it was trying to break through my ribcage and fly to freedom. Psycho stared at the twine, flipped it over and perused it with his eyes and fingers before offering a thumbs up in slow motion. I shook my head, untied the rope, and hit the next one. Again he gave it a close inspection while my chest burned and diaphragm contracted, trying to force air into my empty lungs. The pain level in my knee was at a 10. Stars gathered in my peripheral vision. Those multiple stressors had me teetering like a Jenga tower, and I felt like I was about to black out. If that happened, I'd have to depend on Psycho to swim me to the surface and bring me around. Did I really trust this man to do that? He hated me. What if he failed to execute? What if my body was too burned out that even a rescue breath couldn't rouse me? My mind was spun with those simple toxic questions that never go away. Why was I here? Why suffer when I could quit and be comfortable again? Why risk passing out or even death for a fucking knot drill? I knew that if I succumbed and bolted to the surface, my SEAL career would have ended then and there. But in that moment, I couldn't figure out why I ever gave a fuck. I looked over at Psycho. He held both his thumbs up and sported a big goofy smile on his face like he was watching a damn comedy show. His split second of pleasure in my pain reminded me of all the bullying and taunts I felt as a teenager. But instead of playing the victim and letting negative emotions sap my energy and force me to the surface, a failure, it was as if a new light blazed in my brain that allowed me to flip the script. Time stood still as I realized for the first time that I'd always looked at my entire life, everything I'd been through, from the wrong perspective. Yes, all the abuse I'd experienced and the negativity I had to push through challenged me to the core, but in that moment I stopped seeing myself as the victim of bad circumstance and saw my life as the ultimate training ground instead. My disadvantages had been callousing my mind all along and had prepared me for that moment in that pool with Psycho Pete. I remember my very first day in the gym back in Indiana. My palms were soft and quickly got torn up on the bars because they weren't accustomed to gripping steel. But over time, after thousands of reps, my palms built up a thick callus as protection. The same principle works when it comes to mindset. Until you experience hardships like abuse and bullying, failures and disappointments, your mind will remain soft and exposed. Life experience, especially negative experiences, help callus the mind. But it's up to you where that callus lines up. If you choose to see yourself as a victim of circumstance into adulthood, that callus will become resentment that protects you from the unfamiliar. It will make you too cautious and untrusting, and possibly too angry at the world. It will make you fearful of change and hard to reach, but not hard of mind. That's where I was as a teenager. But after my second hell week, I'd become someone new. I'd fought through so many horrible situations by then, and remained open and ready for more. My ability to stay open represented a willingness to fight for my own life, which allowed me to withstand hailstorms of pain and use it to callous over my victim's mentality. That shit was gone, buried under layers of sweat and hard fucking flesh, and I was starting to callous over my fears too. That realization gave me the mental edge I needed to outlast Psycho Pete one more time. To show him he couldn't hurt me anymore, I smiled back, and the feeling of being on the edge of a blackout went away. Suddenly I was energized, the pain faded, and I felt like I could stay under all day. Psycho saw that in my eyes. I tied off the last knot at leisurely pace, glaring at him the whole time. He gestured with his hands for me to hurry up as his diaphragm contracted. I finally finished. He gave me a quick affirmative and kicked to the surface, desperate for a breath. I took my time, joined him topside, and found him gasping while I felt strangely relaxed. When the chips were down at the pool during Air Force pararescue training, I'd buckled. This time, I won a major battle in the water. It was a big victory, but the war wasn't over. After I passed the knot-tying evolution, we had 2 minutes to climb out onto the deck, get dressed, and head back to the classroom. During first phase, that's usually plenty of time, but a lot of us, not just me, were still healing from Hell Week and not moving at our typical lightning pace. On top of that, once we got through Hell Week, Class 231 went through a bit of an attitude adjustment. Hell Week is designed to show you that a human is capable of much more than you know. It opens your mind to the true possibilities of human potential, and with that comes a change in your mentality. You no longer fear cold water or doing push-ups all day. You realize that no matter what they do to you, they will never break you, so you don't rush as much to make their arbitrary deadlines. You know if you don't make it, the instructors will beat you down, meaning push-ups, getting wet and sandy, anything to up the pain and discomfort quotient. But for those of us knuckle-draggers still in the mix, our attitude was, so the fuck be it. None of us feared the instructors anymore, and we weren't about to rush. They didn't like that one damn bit. I had seen a lot of beatdowns while at Buds, but the one we received that day will go down as one of the worst in history. We did push-ups until we couldn't pick ourselves up off the deck. Then they turned us on our backs and demanded flutter kicks. Each kick was torture for me. I kept putting my legs down because of the pain. I was showing weakness, and if you show weakness, it is on. Psycho and SBG descended and took turns on me. I went from push-ups to flutter kicks to bear crawls until they got tired. I could feel the moving parts of my knee shifting, floating, and grabbing every time I bent it to do those bear crawls, and it was agonizing. I moved slower than normal and knew I was broken. That simple question bubbled up again. Why? What was I trying to prove? Quitting seemed the sane choice. The comfort of mediocrity sounded like sweet relief until Psycho screamed in my ear, "Move faster, motherfucker!" Once again, an amazing feeling washed over me. I wasn't focused on outdoing him this time. I was in the worst pain of my life, but my victory in the pool minutes before came rushing back. I finally proved to myself that I was a decent enough waterman to belong in the Navy SEALs. Heady stuff for a negatively buoyant kid that never took a swim lesson in his entire life. And the reason I got there was because I'd put in the work. The pool had been my kryptonite. Even though I was a far better swimmer as a SEAL candidate, I was still so stressed about water evolutions that I used to hit the pool after a day of training at least 3 times a week. I scaled the 15-foot fence just to gain after-hours access. Other than the academic aspect, nothing scared me as much about the prospects of Buds like the swimming drills, and by dedicating time, I was able to callous over that fear and hit new levels underwater when the pressure was on. I thought about the incredible power of a callous mind on task, as Psycho and SBG beat me down, and that thought became a feeling that took over my body and made me move as fast as a bear around that pool. I couldn't believe what I was doing. The intense pain was gone, and so were those nagging questions. I was putting out harder than ever, breaking through the limitations of injury and pain tolerance, and riding a second wind delivered by a callous mind. After the bear crawls, I went back to doing flutter kicks, and I still had no pain. As we were leaving the pool a half hour later, SBG asked, "Goggins, what got into your ass to make you Superman?" I just smiled and left the pool. I didn't want to say anything because I didn't yet understand what I now know. Similar to using an opponent's energy to gain an advantage, leaning on your callous mind in the heat of battle can shift your thinking as well. Remembering what you've been through and how that has strengthened your mindset can lift you out of a negative brain loop and help you bypass those weak one-second impulses to give in, so you can power through obstacles. And when you leverage a calloused mind, like I did around the pool that day, and keep fighting through pain, it can help you push your limits, because if you accept the pain as a natural process and refuse to give in and give up, you will engage the sympathetic nervous system, which shifts your hormonal flow. The sympathetic nervous system is your fight or flight reflex. It's bubbling just below the surface, and when you are lost, stressed out, or struggling, like I was when I was a down-and-out kid, that's the part of your mind that's driving the bus. We've all tasted this feeling before, those mornings when going on a run is the last thing you want to do, but then 20 minutes into it, you feel energized. That's the work of the sympathetic nervous system. What I found is that you can tap into it on call, as long as you know how to manage your own mind. When you indulge in negative self-talk, the gifts of a sympathetic response will remain out of reach. However, if you can manage those moments of pain that come with maximum effort by remembering what you've been through to get to that point in your life, you will be in a better position to persevere and choose fight over flight. That will allow you to use the adrenaline that comes with a sympathetic response to go even harder. Obstacles at work and school can also be overcome with your callous mind. In those cases, pushing through a given flashpoint isn't likely to lead to a sympathetic response, but it will keep you motivated to push through any doubt you feel about your own abilities. No matter the task at hand, there is always opportunity for self-doubt. Whenever you decide to follow a dream or set a goal, you are just as likely to come up with all the reasons why the likelihood of success is low. Blame it on the fucked up evolutionary wiring of the human mind. But you don't have to let your doubt into the cockpit. You can tolerate doubt as a backseat driver, but if you